everyone. And this one is going to be unique because it's not necessarily fitting in your track exactly, so I'm very appreciative that you came in. And the reason why this particular talk or this particular presentation came to life was I was sitting in conferences and people started asking me questions about, well, how did you go from where you were at to where you are, and why aren't we talking about that a little bit more openly? The reason why this one in particular is maybe got me a little bit more concerned is because I'm going to share the personal side and the vulnerability side that we all talk about, and we talk about our brands being human, and we talk about how do we make that happen, but then bringing your whole self to your job every day, and what does that look like? So I'll share a little bit about my journey. I left a decent amount of time for questions, so it was more about conversations so that we could, you know, magnify some of those previous conversations we had. If it looks like it's totally bombing and you guys are not interested, raise your hand and we'll change topics, or I'll sing and dance and do whatever. So my story is really, I would love to say that my story is unique, but it's not. What is unique about my story is how open I am about it. We all talk about going to work and bringing our whole self, and but we don't always do that. And so I always tell people, I belong with these people, but it wasn't a genuine smile. I was the person that went to work and faked it till I made it. I would come in, I would talk about the data, I would talk about all the reasons why we needed to do things, but I wasn't exactly being able to bring my whole self. There was a portion of me that was a little scared to bring my whole self, because we all come in with our very curated content of ourselves and our stories. And so with that, I want to talk a little bit about my journey to share. So I started doing independent photography. Years and years ago, I found that I wanted to do photography with people that got married and, you know, senior sessions and things like that. And then it led me into retail. And retail is a whole nother beast. And so understanding the pieces around retail and what that meant. But what happened from retail to private retail was a unique transformation for me. It was back in the days where film was really film, and you were processing film. But now we're moving into a digital era. And when you move into a digital era, there's a lot of things that have to happen. You're no longer processing film. You're now using dye sub printers. So there was this technical piece to it that I liked, but I couldn't quite figure out how to tap into it. So one of my mentors came to me and he said, we actually have this opportunity. It's not at all what you've been doing this whole time, but I think that you would like where it takes you. So Microsoft had stores that only serviced their employees, and their employees could come in and buy their software and their other licenses and their gaming stuff at a discount. He's like, I know you're gonna hate it for a little bit, but just give it a try. So I joined, and I stayed there for about 7 years because I didn't hate it. It was a very nice, if you take someone who's been in a retail background, working the hours that you work in retail and the holidays, into an environment where now your hours are 10 to 4 each day, it was like the honeypot of hours and workload for me. And so I stayed there for a little bit, but then I got connected to all these amazing, smart individuals and all these amazing mentors, and I've never been in a place where people were investing in other people the same way it was happening when I was at Microsoft. And so they talked to me quite a bit about, hey, you really need to come on board, you need to come on board, you need to come on board, and I just wouldn't give up that great 10 to 4 schedule until they brought up the Xbox 360. I don't know if I have any gamers in the room, but if you are a gamer, then you may have known about the red circle of death, you know, the three red lights. And they were spinning up this team of, I call it the Wild Wild West. We didn't know what we were going to be doing. We thought we were going to be servicing people that had three or more repairs on their console, and we found out it was a lot more. And that catapulted me into the spotlight unintentionally. I had no interest and going down a marketing piece. I had no interest in going down the path of social media, but that particular moment of getting in front of the customers and talking to them and knowing that everything that we said was being recorded and shared virally on YouTube really kind of flexed those muscles of being able to show up and help those people that were experiencing these repairs. And then I land a few years later in their social media department, and we had this very unique challenge where, do you teach your support professionals to be marketers, or do you teach your marketers to provide support? And so our, you know, our CMO was all about, hey, Windows is great, Windows 10 is great. And I said, that sounds really great until it's not great. When you've got great content out there, marketing, bringing advertisements to your product, but a customer is struggling with it, how are you going to handle their response on social when they tell you it's not as great as you're saying? And so all of a sudden, we had this unique challenge of, hey, download Windows 10, it's amazing, and the, you know, the responses that happen behind the scenes. So I spent about 4.5 years there before I decided I wanted to try my hand elsewhere, because I'd kind of grown up through my career and at Microsoft. And so because of that, that same mentor said, well, I think you need to go elsewhere, because I don't think that you are realizing just this unique piece that you're bringing to your job every day. And I said, okay. And lo and behold, someone that I'd worked with at Microsoft went to McKesson, and she needed some help running her team, and so I joined, and that's where I am today. I'm at McKesson, but we'll talk a little bit about how did I take those steps along the way, and how did I gain help. So I always tell people, have a healthy fear. If you're not scared, you're not trying hard enough. You need to stretch a little bit further. I get very clear on what you don't know. So in looking at my path and where it gets really prescriptive, you start thinking about, I took the role at the Xbox tech lead. Then I was asked to take on the team and manage their escalations. So, you know, those top level concerns. And that's really where the social space started getting real for me. We launched our tweet fleet, and we still didn't necessarily have executive buy-in on that. It was just kind of something cute that we were playing in at that point. Then I took on the fraud manager. And then I said, I am having a terrible time getting people to buy into my message. Why aren't people understanding how important being in front of your customers is? And it was because I wasn't coming equipped with all the right data. I was coming equipped with part of the data. And so I took a what we called a quality deliver manager role, and that actually pulled me out of the social space and into only the data space. And it was very hard. It was one of those moments where when my manager would send me the IM, I would panic when she was asking me for certain data. But what it did was, right, got me very clear on what I didn't know. And I was able to then start seeing the data from the other side. And in my early days, when I would go sit in at these meetings, it was almost like, I'll tell it in the way that it was. It was, I was sitting in there with engineers, very intelligent people, people that I didn't even feel that I had the, I shouldn't have been sitting at that table having the argument with them. And it was very much like, oh, you're in social media, that's really cute, but we're doing real work over here. And that was what I had facing me. And so that is why I made the intentional decision to step to the other side and go start doing some of the work that some of those stakeholders were doing, so that when I returned, so you can see that I returned coming back to our community business and then moving into our social media business. When I returned, I came equipped being the trusted advisor. So that's where I say go do it. The wash, rinse, repeat. Anyone's read the back of their shampoo bottles? It tells you wash, rinse, repeat. I did that over and over and over again until I started gaining that peace and that trusted advisor status. And so I'll talk a little bit about some of the risk that we took. So now, I still have that challenge today, because what I've done is I'm washing and I'm rinsing and I'm repeating, and I'm doing it at another large enterprise. So I'm still working to gain those advisors, and the I always tell people it's almost like you're starting over a little bit, because all those years of work, I've spent 14 years in one enterprise, and I step over to a new enterprise, and I'm having to redo some of the tasks that I did before so that I could have the arguments on why what we're doing is important. Is this resonating with anyone, or you guys want me hush? Okay. So I'll talk a little bit about the repeat. So showing up as your true self. So we talk a lot about content and humanizing it. If you're a Brené Brown fan, vulnerability, authenticity, but we don't do it really well in ourselves. So I had to start figuring out how I show up as my true self. And my true self really was, I wasn't qualified to be at that table with those people. I had to kind of take a step back and go do it and get it. But I also wasn't speaking up on where I needed the help. I was a little quiet at first. I was faking it till I make it. But what I learned is that when you start telling people the help that you need, there are so many people that will line up to help you, right? I started talking about what it's like to be a mom. You know, I started out very young, having children too young. What does that battle look like? What does it feel like? And then I started figuring out, and hopefully I'm not going to offend anyone here, it's redacted on the slides, but I truly live my life by limit the fucks you give. And what I mean by that is not going in and flipping the table and telling the, you know, the world F off, but I allowed myself at that time 10 things to really care about so that I wasn't getting flustered in all the little, you know, the don't sweat the small stuff details. But I was internalizing all those details and I was feeling overwhelmed on how do I make this work. And I'm somewhat outgoing, but on the flip side, right, I'm holding part of myself back. And so now I truly, each day, I give myself 3. If that battle is not worth the emotional energy that I have at that point in time or I'm out of fucks to give, I either put it on the back burner or I realize I don't really care about this right now. And this made my corporate advancement a lot easier. And the reason why it made it a lot easier for me is I wasn't getting wound up on stuff that didn't matter. And I always ask myself, are you gonna think about this in 2 weeks? Are you gonna think about this in 3 years? If you're not, then remove it from your plate for right now and maybe come back to it. And then the run to the fire. Why didn't people trust me? Because I wasn't initially in the trenches with them, right? Figuring out what your fire is and not being scared to run to it. I always tell people that kind of falls in seizing the chaos. You see people talk about chaos is the right amount, the right time to go do whatever you want to do, and it has truly been that way for me. I'm not saying go run into an actual fire when you leave here today, but recognizing that there is someone there that is going to show up and be in the trenches, whether it's with your leadership team or your teams or your peers or your colleagues, and building the trust. And this is the one where I also had to really, really work. I met some people in the back of the room today because that's where we think all the cool kids are. And we talk a little bit about being Scorpios and the month that we were born in, and you know, there's the ego in there. And so I stopped caring about the credit for the work that I was doing. And that was really hard because when you're trying to build your career, you're trying to build your career and get people to believe in what you're doing, but you also can't do it if you leave a trail of dead bodies behind you. And so I started recognizing the more I helped people around me, the more natural some of that stuff just happened. And don't get me wrong, like it frustrates me. I still get emails from someone and I have to use the technique of, oh my goodness, her tone just gets under my skin, and so I pretend that my husband sent it to me or pretend that one of my kids sent it to me. But realizing that building trust is going a level deeper, right? I don't know if anyone's seen that meme on there, be the woman that straightens another woman's crown without telling the world it's crooked. It's the same thing, right? Recognizing where you can help people and not really caring who gets the credit for the job, just that the job gets done. And when I started using that methodology, I started figuring out, oh my goodness, all of this is coming back full circle. And I still struggle with it, you know, today. And then taking the calculated risk. So each time you take a risk, you need to do your calculations. So I'm gonna give a couple examples. Windows 10 we launched, and the idea was that you would go in a queue and you would download it. Well, what happens when it doesn't work as planned? You start getting tweets. I think we got 15,000 tweets in the first 1.5 hours. We didn't have the staff to handle that. And so how are we gonna do it? So I don't know if there's anyone else in the room that's old enough to know what being Rickrolled is in the technology world. All right, More hands? No? Yes? So I went rogue and posted, download Windows 10 now. And it was a tweet to Rick Astley singing, I'm never going to give you up. My cell phone has never rang more times from executives than it did when I did this rogue tweet. I had many people asking me, what in the world were you thinking? And I had to just, eventually I stopped answering them because I wanted to wait. I said, just wait for it. If it fails horribly, then it fails horribly and we'll figure out how to fix it. But I need you to just wait and trust me on it. Next thing I know, people are tweeting it out. Apple's tweeting us back. We're laughing about it. People are tweeting pictures of, you know, 84-year-old Rose from Titanic talking about how long it's taking to download. And so those are the types of calculated risk that you can take once you've built their trust. They weren't happy with me at first. I will tell you that. You're going to have a little bit of thick skin. But I knew what I was doing in terms of our audience versus in terms of who the executives thought our audience was. Any questions so far? So I really left a ton of time for discussion and questions because that's what was happening when I was out and about at previous conferences. So I just wanted to engage in conversation more than anything. And if I'm totally boring you, we can do something else as well.
Hi, so my name's Stephanie. I work at Lord Corporation. It's a manufacturing engineering company. So you said, I know personally if I were to do something like posting a tweet, Rickrolling people, I would probably get fired.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that, and how do you balance kind of coming back to the executives and being like, well, no, trust me on this, even though I don't have the data behind it. And you said kind of coming back to them with the information. So how do you do that when you're going on a gut instinct, or how do you justify it?
So what's really interesting, right? Going from technology to healthcare are two different beasts, and I'm where you are today. I could not go rogue at McKesson and post a tweet Rickrolling people. So I think it's about figuring out what's right for your audience and what that engagement is and what that risk looks like. For McKesson right now, there's a lot of content that is generated, but not necessarily a ton of the same engagement that we had when I was at Microsoft. They're two different brands. Does anyone in here know who McKesson is? Okay, so what's interesting, when I joined Microsoft, Microsoft was a Fortune 25, you know, company. McKesson, when I joined them, was Fortune 5. And so I always joke with people, like, they're the company that a lot of people don't realize is behind the scenes on some of their healthcare services. So it's very similar, right? I couldn't do that same level of tweet or that same level of risk. Where the risk is for me now is I lead a team of storytellers, and they actually take executives through a physical space sometimes, and legislators and lawmakers through, and it's mocked up as though you're a patient navigating that system. So the risk in that piece is throwing their script away. Like, why are we reading from a script if we talk about real human connection? And so that was the risk that I took there. Does it always work out? No, because there are some people that really feel comfortable with a script. So I think it's, again, being comfortable and saying when you're wrong works too. I've had plenty of things that I've, you know, had done wrong along the way. But when you own what you've done wrong and how you've learned from it and what you're going to do differently, that helps as well.
Hi, I'm Kathy, and I work with BorgWarner, which is an automotive supplier of propulsion components, so very conservative company.
Yep.
I'm lucky in that my bosses and executives, in theory, are very supportive of a more proactive approach until we actually get ready to pull the trigger,
mm-hmm.
and then they freak out and we have to step back. So have you got an example on how you can kind of help people be more comfortable so you don't have to step back, or do you just have to step back and go at it again another time?
So I use the terminology camel's nose on the tent, and I use that a lot of times because, and your approach, my approach at McKesson has to be different than my approach at Microsoft, right? But I push just a little until I'm kind of there, and then I'll push a little bit more the next time. And then the next time until we're finally in the tent together. So I think some of it is again, you wouldn't go rogue and do some of those crazy things on your own because you have your bills you need to pay. But I think you could also do, we've done simulations where we've taken a small group through and we've talked about some of the things that we wanted to do. I brought in a different market. So at McKesson, the average, you know, person has been there 25, 35 years. So we've got a generational difference between the platforms as well. So we've done things where I've pulled in different markets and asked them, like, hey, what if I did this? How would you feel about this? And then share that. And depending on your relationship with your leadership team, whatever level it is, bringing them in some of that. I would do some of it. I'm very much about the calculated risk. I would do some of it in-house first and figure out how it feels before you, you know, air all the laundry in front of your executive team. But that's something that I would suggest.
Do you ever go way, 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 way big beyond what you want to do so that when they push back, mm-hmm. they're pushing back to what you want to do and go, wow, that's a relief. She's not going to do that. Have you tried that approach?
I do, and it's the same thing if I'm negotiating salary, right? Like you ask a little bit more than when you pull back. But it's knowing that and knowing, okay, this is totally crazy. They would never do it. But now maybe we try, you know, throwing a script out instead. And for us, the risks are different. You know, it was first, let's take the script and modify it to where people are contributing. If you're the person speaking to the content, how do you say it to your voice and to where you feel authentic? To now I'm kind of like, well, if you guys want me to use a script, like I don't even know. Because it's about that connection in the room. In the person that you're talking to, and you need to, when you're talking to someone physically versus on social, you don't necessarily have time to curate and check it. So in the space that I'm in now, there's a lot more face-to-face that bleeds into social.
First of all, I love hearing the evolution there. I started in engineering, and here I am as a social media expert, so I love that. But my question is, I work for a PR firm that deals specifically with small cap biotechs, so very, very limited in what we can say. And so most of the content we can use is just thought leadership from those executives. So what your kind of experience or maybe any recommendations you have are with dealing with health and biotech and pharma executives and thought leadership? Because it's kind of quite a push and pull from my experience.
It's definitely a push and pull, and I don't think it's a challenge that's going away anytime soon, right? In order to get to that level, especially in that particular industry, you've got to have a lot of experience. And so with the experience comes a little bit of disconnect sometimes. But what I think in that era that I really like, I don't know if we have anyone in here from United Healthcare, but if you watch what United Healthcare shares, they share the stories of the people using their product. And it's not anything that's going to fall under NDA. It's not anything that is, you know, secret shares or going to dance on the borderline of we can cure the world with this and, you know, these false statements that your legal team is probably worried about, right? Anytime you remove that plausible deniability. But what they do really well is they share the patient stories. Like there's one, and I tear up when I watch it. It's the young girl taking her first breath after a lung transplant. And so I think that that's where, and I could be wrong, but I think that that's where the shift needs to happen, is how you allow the end user to tell their story. And if you talk about storytelling, right, it's never about the company. You don't make the company the hero, you make the user the hero. So I think there's more of that that's there. Because I will tell you, when I read some of the biopharma and some of the medical imaging and some of the healthcare pieces, sometimes I feel like it's a little dry. But again, recognizing it's also very serious. We also have lives, you know, behind some of this stuff. But I think the risk there is figuring out how you tell the customer's story by using your modality.
Other questions?
Hi. My name is Melissa, and I work for an advanced materials and chemical company. And I know I can definitely resonate when you say you're in a room with people that are much smarter than you, technically speaking, when it comes to like PhDs and chemists and physicists. What kind of advice, besides what you said in your presentation, could you give to someone who is trying to get someone like that to take you seriously and not just say, my wife's on Facebook to look at recipes?
Right.
You know, that kind of advice.
So I think for me, when my mentor told me to leave Microsoft, he told me to leave Microsoft because I wasn't recognizing the value that my unique vision brought in. Anyone that's seen Mary, Mary speaks at some of these, and she's on the social team, and Microsoft's now this very open social format, and we weren't at the days when I was there, right? We were kind of easing into that. But I think the piece that recognizing is that I was underestimating myself at the seat of the table. I didn't bring my whole self. I wasn't willing to say, hey, I might not know what you're talking about, but I think it's this, this, and this, because I didn't want to seem any more, not for lack of better words, dumb, right? I was undereducated in comparison to the people that were there. But once I started saying, hey, I don't fully understand this, and picking people that I could spend some time with, I job shadowed some of them, right? And that was really, really helpful to me. I said, can I just follow you through your day? Can I just see what you're doing for 4 hours? And that helped too, because then you're developing, you know, relationships and connections. And when someone sees that you are interested in what they're doing, a lot of times they're going to be interested in what you're doing. And so I left being way more technical than I came on. Now, I would never, ever, ever tell you that I was an engineer. Can I go write some code now if I had to? I can. But it wasn't even that it interests me, it was the drive that I wanted to have a seat at the table and have the conversation with them that really helped me. And then, totally different personalities. I'm being outspoken, I'm talking, but I have people who are engineers and who don't necessarily engage the same way, and so you might be experiencing some of that. It's the ability to, I tell people, it's the ability to speak geek, but not really perform the task. So if you're in an environment where you can reach out to one or two people, I encourage it. I mean, I still do it today. I'm still sending notes out like, hey, I saw your stuff on LinkedIn. Is there any way you could spend 15 minutes with me? I feel like we should always be learning, and that's my way to always be learning. But on the flip side, right, give back. Some people kind of laugh. I have a millennial mentor, and he's about 15 years younger than me. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, well, we talk a lot about what does it mean to be a millennial, and I'm stuck in this generation difference in that I had my kids way early, so I don't necessarily connect in some of the same ways with some of the people. And so I have a millennial mentor, and we get together and we talk about those things, and he told me the other day, he's like, I take as much away from this conversation as you do. And so I think it's that cross-share. And being open, you know, will you get burned every now and then? You will. But I think it's the limiting the redacted that you give, and then still picking yourself back up and learning.
Other questions? Now, I know from, oh, you're perfect.
No. Millennial mentor, I love that, by the way. That's pretty cool. My name is Brian, senior social media specialist at the Blue Book Building and Construction Network. In Jefferson Valley, New York. My question is about kind of going back to gaining leadership support and the, you know, C-level executives. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, but I myself or someone on my team or someone around me will suggest something to the C-level team, and they'll say, sure, we'll look into it, and nothing happens. The next year, we'll suggest the same thing. We really got to do this. Sure, we'll look into it. Nothing happens. You know, 2-3 years later, they finally start. Okay, yeah, let's maybe do this. Hey, well, what about when I was talking about that 3 years ago? Have you experienced that? And if so, have you found any, I guess, PC or, you know, professional ways to accelerate that process?
Yes. So when we talk about mentors, I actually have a couple of people that are mentors now. And we're all marketers in here, we're all communicators, we know what that means, right? It works both ways. So because I've taken that step, that's helped open up those channels. The other thing is I've done the don't care who gets the credit for it. So if I see a communication go out or an idea go out, and it's one that I think that maybe, hey, we could try it a little bit differently, I'll actually go and recraft it very much behind the scenes and take it to whoever did that and say, hey, could we try to do it this way the next time? And that's been helpful. We have a new initiative, and it's not new, every corporation does it, but we're calling it Spend Smarter, right? What does that mean? Limit your travel, eat responsibly on the corporate card, all that kind of good stuff that we've all been a part of. But the buzz that I hear, not being in that C-suite, you know, I'm integrating with all of the employees, is, well, I'm sure our executives are, you know, eating it up while they're on the road and they're not living that same piece. So what I did was I went back to the particular group that was running this initiative with the C-suite executive in it, and I said, hey, it'd be really great if you guys did a campaign around how you travel, right? I think it'll help land your initiative. And so I always go at it with, how do I help land their message? And then in turn, I try to figure out camel's nose on the tents. What am I going to ask for in return? So that's something that's worked for me. I won't say it's worked every time, but it's worked the majority of the time. Sometimes it's just about resilience.
Brilliant, brilliant. Other questions? What I was going to say before is, I've been to enough of these to know, and I have a lot of people come up and say, I'm banging my head against the wall trying to get executives to go forward in social, and I've been trying, and they quickly turn into career conversations. So I guess I want to say, Carissa's being really open and really vulnerable. Your bosses probably aren't in the room. This is a time for you to do the same if you've got that kind of question. And
yeah.
Well, first of all, I wanted to know, have you read the book, The Subtle Art of Giving a Fuck? Because it was a great book for anybody.
I have not, but I will now. It's got my favorite word.
Yeah, it's really, really good. But I'm having that same issue right now. Mm-hmm. We're in a process where our CPO would love to tell the story and the journey and where we've come from. And, you know, I buy it all, you know, hook, line, and sinker, because that's my story, too. I've been hanging out with them for 10
yeah.
years. But now being able to change it around and tell it from stakeholders. However, as part of that, doing a social media is just still so out there for him. And just, you know, where do I go to show studies or success stories? I work for EY, and I know this is not the all of EY, this is procurement, but they look after $8 billion worth of spend, so it's a big deal, and we need to be able to use all those channels to be able to continue to have people come to us and do what they do best.
So I think one of the other techniques that I've used is, you hear, right, you're in business to either make money or save money. So if you can figure out any way to where, for us to get the social platform that we wanted when I was doing the Microsoft consumer business, and what that meant was anything that was consumer facing, I owned that experience on the channel. It wasn't necessarily me responding, there was a team of people responding. But they very much wanted to take that offline and have it go more into like a DM type piece and stay behind the scenes to mitigate some of the risk. And I argued that we would hinder our business by doing that, because if we start talking about social, they were telling me it was one-to-one. And I said, actually, I'm gonna disagree, right? I've earned the right to disagree here now. It's one-to-one in front of many. And if that solution can help that other person, then we should be sharing that. And it's that same philosophy, that transparency piece. I think there's still a lot of concern, and there's still a lot of stigma between what you think you can share and what you can't share. One of the examples I use is, if the DOD, if the Department of Defense, can go live every Wednesday, we can figure out a way to be a little bit more transparent. And so I bring examples like that have nothing to do with the business. They're not briefing you when the DOD goes live about, you know, the security of the nation. It's just a human being there. So I tend to go out and look for, you know, if you see a senator dancing, anything that would be considered more serious, I try to find some of those and pull those in, especially as some of the metrics, you know, kind of move from likes and that kind of thing more to those meaningful interactions, and really figuring out how you draw that human connection. I worked at Microsoft for, you know, a long time, and we needed data to explain why we needed to go to the restroom. And I would come in and say, we don't need data to be a good human. And so I looked for the human pieces, and that might be where your in is. And obviously, anytime you want to reach out and we want to just toss ideas around, sometimes it's that outside party that can say, hey, have you thought about this? And you can tell me all the reasons why it doesn't work, and we can kick ideas around. So I'm heavily, you know, inviting anyone that wants to connect and just connect and let's talk through it and figure it out. Yeah.
I have almost the opposite problem, where I have several clients that the executives are bought in, they're excited, they want social media, and they say, okay, great, here's the credentials of my LinkedIn, go thought leadership for me. And I have to say, okay, well, I'm in my 20s, I'm just a PR girl, I am not the CMO of a company, I can't thought leadership for you. So do you have any kind of advice or recommendations on how to not just get their buy-in, but get their actual engagement?
Yep.
Yeah, involvement.
So I think one of the things is when people tell me, hey, I want to get on social, I ask why. What do you want to do? Are you just going to show up? Because you'll just be part of the chatter. You'll be more of the noise, right? I think it's Jason Daly from Facebook says you scroll through something like 800 feet of newsfeed each day on your phone. So just getting out there is just being part of the noise. Go thought leadership for me. That kind of happened to me as well. We have an amazing CEO when I was at Microsoft, and it was, hey, can you go answer my tweets for us? Can you teach your team to do that? I'm like, I can, but that kind of goes against that human connection that people are looking for. What I have done in similar instances when I've helped other groups is, okay, let's have a meeting and let's talk about who you are and let me kind of figure out who you are and then draw out some of those pieces. And that was really helpful when I was trying to get executives who were trying to connect with a younger market. They really wanted to be there, but they didn't know how. And I didn't necessarily have the same life experiences or the same skill sets in my job. And so we would sit down and we would have a conversation on, okay, I'm just asking who you are. And then I'd go mock up, right, in PowerPoint or Word or whatever your tool is, what it might look like to them. Like, okay, here's the next 6 weeks of where I think that we should go. And then be ready to jump ship and abandon that if that doesn't work. Because as you know, you might think something's a brilliant idea and then it just falls flat. But I think getting to know them and having the conversation would be where I would start, because you can't be their persona. Like, it defeats the purpose of them showing up unique. I think what most people find is once they kind of dip their toes in the water, it's not as scary as they once thought it was, and there's a ton of really supportive people out there. I don't know if they're looking at LinkedIn. LinkedIn's a really great place for collective thoughts and sharing. We curate differently on LinkedIn than we do on Facebook. I was telling someone in the room that Facebook is where I talk about how hard it is to be a mom and I want to strangle my kids, and LinkedIn is where I talk about I got my shit together. So, you know, it's self-curated.
It almost sounds like what you're describing is you would do a brand brief or a strategic brand brief. Mm-hmm. You're talking basically create a personal brand brief for somebody like that.
Yeah.
You come to agreement over, here's who you are, here's what you represent, so you've got a basis to come back to. That's a really interesting idea.
And most people, most executives and leadership teams really like to talk about themselves and how they got there. They really do. If you've ever sat in a meeting, in a mentor meeting, and you're like, holy cow, I have questions and we're talking about you, right? So if you can pull that out and figure it out, and you know, using the visual cues in the room, do they have pictures of their kids, do they have a picture of their wife, right, trying to remind them how to bring that human element in, I'd probably go down that path first.
Executives are the most interesting people in the world. That's why they want to
talk
about
them. They are.
We
all know
that.
I'm the executive of my life.
So then follow up to that, what do you do when they say, oh, I know I should, but I don't have time? They're like, oh, I'm just too busy for that. I can't do that while I'm at this event. I have to be doing all of this. Like, we had an event last week where the communication team was essentially going around and taking the executive's phone and going on their LinkedIn to make sure posts were going out. Like, how do you overcome that response?
So A, if it's not interesting to them, you can't force it to be interesting to them. Like, I have worked with executives that really bought in and really loved it, and then I've worked with some and they're like, look, I know I have to do this, but I don't want to. It's the same way as working a room. If you've ever worked with someone who doesn't want to work a room, and they're like, oh, well, I've got this business call I gotta make, and they find a way not to. I think it's also helping them see the value in it, but it needs to be their perceived value, not your perceived value. And that's really, really tough and really difficult sometimes, because what you know as a social media expert and, you know, professional to be the value could be very different than what they perceive the value through. I always tell people executives don't necessarily understand how important social is until they're looking for their next gig. And so.
How about another question? You have time for. Oh.
Thank you. Carissa, I think it's great what you mentioned is this going to matter in 2 years? I think that really resonates with me, and I just wanted to reiterate that. I think that that was a very powerful statement. And just to note, back in the day, I did look just like Rick Astley.
What'd you say? You did?
I looked just like him. I had that hair.
All right.
And now all I get is Howie Mandel. So, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I really, we're all emotional human beings, and sometimes we pretend that we're not. But I'm the person that will dwell if I don't allow myself not to. I'm the person that every conversation I leave and I find myself thinking about it later on, like, oh my gosh, should I have said that? Should I not have said that? Really over-evaluating it. And I wasn't happy. That's why that smile wasn't genuine, right? Like, I truly let the small stuff matter. And it stopped me from growing, right? Because then you can get so worked up over, oh, I don't like when Sally sends me that email, and why is she getting a change in title and I'm not? And it really doesn't matter. What matters is when you go home, are you happy with what you're doing? Are you going home and you're being your whole self to your family? And when those things started impacting in a way that I couldn't be my whole self to the people that are really gonna be there next to me at the end of my life, then I needed to change. And it's a practice. I tell people all the time, I dance a delicate balance between gratitude and grit. And it's a practice sometimes. Sometimes I gotta make myself be grateful.